everybody. Welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by Packers News and JS Online. And welcome to week four. I'm Ryan Wood alongside my colleague and partner, Tom Silverstein. And Tom, this used to be the quarter pull. I guess it's not so much the quarter pull anymore. What the quarter pull will be after the first quarter of next week's game against Cincinnati. But yes. they've arrived at the traditional quarter pull mark.
The 4.25 mark.
That's right, with the extra 17th game schedule. And look, it's a big matchup. Packers hosting the Steelers at Lambeau Field. Two storied franchises. The first time that Aaron Rodgers has started against the Steelers at home. The first time he started against the Steelers since Super Bowl 45. Talking about this week, one of those oddities that 2013 and 2017, the two times that they've played the Steelers since the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers was out with a broken collarbone in both years. He broke his collarbone twice. The Steelers were on the schedule both times. This time, no broken collarbone. And it's going to be billed as Aaron Rodgers versus Ben Roethlisberger, the same two starters as a decade ago. But it's obviously not the same for one of them.
No, it's not. And it's not the typical Steelers team that we're used to seeing. At least they haven't been this season. They had a nice win to open the season in Buffalo, but they got a lot of issues. And the Packers are coming off their signature, well, what they hope is their signature win. But, you know, Steelers, they're going to have T.J. Watt back, and I would expect them to be a lot more competitive than they were against a division opponent like Cincinnati. And don't write off Cincinnati. They're not a bad team. But as far as Roethlisberger versus Rodgers, I don't know. Maybe it'll be Najee Harris versus Aaron Jones. I don't know.
Well, here's what you need to know about Ben Roethlisberger right now. Their one win this season, and it was a dandy. Winning at Buffalo, a legitimate title contender. Buffalo Bills, 23-16 to open the season. Ben Roethlisberger threw 18 of 32 for a season low, 188 yards, one touchdown. He had a 83.9 passer rating. In the two games since then, at home against Las Vegas, 295 yards. Last week at home against Cincy, 318 yards. The less they use Ben Roethlisberger, the better at this point.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with their offensive line. I think he hasn't had really a chance to stay alive in the pocket. I think they've been overrun at times, and it explains why Najee Harris has 27 targets, 20 catches, leads the team in catches with 20. It shouldn't be that way. You know, he should be, most of his yardage should be on the ground, and he's got more yardage through the air than he does on the ground. So they've got some things they got to clean up on their offensive line, and the Packers have to take advantage of that. You know, they can't. If they can't get a rush on Ben Roethlisberger, then he will be the quarterback that, you know, people expect to see.
Yeah, Ben Roethlisberger's been sacked 8 times this season. That's tied for 7th most in the league. And Najee Harris, I mean, you talk about him as a pass catcher. He's a big, big running back, obviously, and the Packers are going to have their hands full with them this season. But Najee Harris only has 123 yards on the ground. I mean, he's got 149 receiving yards, 123 yards on the ground on 40 carries, 3.1 yard average. So the Packers talked about it all week. They have to have a tackling plan against Najee Harris, 6'1", 232, a big, talented running back, obviously a first-round pick. He's a guy that can make you look silly, but they haven't had it from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at Roethlisberger's numbers, and probably what sticks out to me is the 6.2 yards per attempt, which kind of explains that, you know, why, or explains that he has been thrown a lot to the backs. There got to be a lot of checkdowns in there. You know, they need an offense that's balanced and can get the ball to Juju Smith-Schuster and Chase Claypool. I think that there's a lot of things that they're still out there for them, but you know, the Packers have to jump on them. They need to bring the heat to Roethlisberger right away and show that they're going to kind of overrun that offensive line if they can.
Here's what I think they cannot afford to do against Ben Roethlisberger. The coverage breakdowns that you saw Monday Night Football Week 2 against the Detroit Lions, they can't have that.
Right.
The coverage breakdowns that they had opener against the New Orleans Saints, can't have that. I thought they were much more on the same page, much more communicative against the 49ers, and it helped their defense. If you have those coverage breakdowns against Ben Roethlisberger, he will see it and he will hit it and he'll kill you. I mean, at this point in his career, he's seen everything. He's not going to miss it. So, not having those breakdowns on the back end, and they seem to be trending in the right direction, I think that's crucial against a quarterback like that.
Yeah, and I think unwritten or unsaid by the Packers was that Roethlisberger's not going to get out of the pocket the way he used to. I mean, he was so dangerous. You first of all, he's hard to tackle, but you know, as they saw in the Super Bowl and in other games, he could get out of the pocket and make so many big plays, and I'm not sure he can do that anymore. He's what, 39 years old? So again, they got to keep him there, and then they've got to get some rush, especially up the middle. Kenny Clark is coming off just a great game. He just destroyed Alex Mack in the 49ers game. He's going to be going up against a rookie, so that's going to be really key to get up in Roethlisberger's face.
Why do you think Kenny Clark was as good as he was against the 49ers? You know, to me, I think a big part of that is they obviously moved him around the defensive line, but Tyler Lancaster showed up in the pass rush. Jonathan Garman, TJ Slayton. If you're one guy and there's nothing else around you, you're going to see triple teams the entire game. You got to have guys around you when they're one on ones. And I felt like for the more than any other point this young season, they had that with the other guys around Kenny Clark. How much do you think that helped?
Yeah, it had to help some. I still was just taken aback by how bad Alex Mack was against Clark and Tyler Lancaster, and their interior just did not hold up very well. But you know, Clark is playing good. He's played really well in all three games. The thing that is missing is Za'Darius Smith. Za'Darius Smith really plays off of Clark when he's getting pressure in the middle and they're doubling Kenny Clark. Za'Darius Smith is just eating, you know, and they're not really getting that. They're getting pressure from Preston Smith. He's doing some good things. Gary's there once in a while, but it's not the same. I mean, this guy is a sack artist, and them not having him is hurting them really a lot right now.
You mentioned Preston Smith. The stunning thing about him is how well he's played through three games not having Za'Darius Smith. He is the guy that opposing offensive lines are going to key on the edge, because it's him, it's Rashawn Gary, and then it's what? I mean, it's Preston Smith's show right now, and he had three quarterback hits, a sack against the 49ers. Through three games, he's got five quarterback hits. He had 11 quarterback hits all of 2020. You want to talk about a guy who got a pay cut because of the lack of production, frankly, the lack of pass rush. He has responded with almost half of his total quarterback hits from all of last season this first three games. And Aaron Rodgers talked about it earlier this week, how he's proud of Preston Smith for the way that he's come out and responded to the pay cut. We talked to Preston Smith today, and I'm curious what stood out to you, Tom, but to me, I mean, he was pretty candid about a guy that he's feeling a lot better through these three games than he did at all 2020. He said it's a physical thing. He's able to get in rhythm earlier in games and set up his pass rush moves. And we've seen from Preston Smith that he has that it's there in his talent. He just hasn't been consistent with it, and he's put it together for three games.
I think what he was saying from beginning to end was, Mike Pettine's gone, I don't have to drop back anymore. You know, I mean, he was saying it as subtly as he could, but that's what he was saying, is that he can start to set up his pass rushes now. that he doesn't have to spend half his time dropping back and being more analytical. He can work his pass rush moves. And there's still a way to go. This is not like a guy who's looks like a 15 sack guy yet, but if he can continue to build on his start, then maybe he can be that guy by the time Za'Darius Smith comes around, and assuming Za'Darius Smith plays again, that will help him quite a bit. And then, especially when they have Gary, Preston Smith, and Za'Darius Smith on the field at the same time on third downs. But I think Preston Smith's whole deal is, give me a chance to rush the passer. Didn't get to do that last year, and we'll see, judge me after that. So that's kind of how I took, a lot of what he was saying on Thursday.
You want to talk about a 15-sack guy, T.J. Watt, on the other side of the line of scrimmage this week. One of the best players. Packers fans might have heard about him before, and not only from a former Badger, T.J. Watt, but a guy that the Packers did not draft and instead drafted Kevin King. T.J. Watt, we knew when that happened, we knew that that was going to be a pick that we'd remember one way or the other. We didn't know how. We had no idea how at the time, but we knew one way or the other we'd remember that pick a few years later, and it's a few years later now, and my goodness do we. T.J. Watt, it did not play last week against the Bengals because of the groin. He was a limited participant Wednesday, full participant Thursday, so he's coming to Lambeau Field. He's coming back to Wisconsin, and we don't know if Kevin King is going to be on the field because Kevin King is in the concussion protocol, but that's a pick that people remember, not in a good way.
Yeah, and, at the time, people forget that at the time they were desperate for corners. I mean, they had Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins and Devon House. They were desperate. But, that's – and T.J. Watt, nobody would have – guessed that he was going to be defensive player of the year eventually. I mean, I don't think he was living in a shadow of JJ. But that said, that's why, you get paid the big money to make those decisions. And that was a decision that Ted Thompson made that wasn't very good. And so, it would have changed the whole who knows what the Packers would look like if they had drafted him. They don't sign Za'Darius Smith or Preston Smith.
That's right.
Do they draft Rashawn Gary? I don't know. Who knows how this whole thing would have gone? But, he is a superstar player. And it marks the second straight week that they've got to handle a stud pass rusher. A little different circumstance, but T.J. Watt and Nick Bosa, take your choice. One or both is pretty good. One is one, and one is 1A. So they got their hands full again this week.
Well, at least we can talk about what they're going to do now, because there was some guesswork, and you were on top of it. Not a surprise. No guesswork for Tom Silverstein. I was guessing last week as to what they would do, and they trotted out Josh Nyman as you thought that they would, and it. Josh Nyman played really, really well. He didn't give up a sack against Nick Bosa. I think I turned to our colleague Pete Doherty before. And I hate to out him here, but I turned to him before the game in the press box. I said, over under on how many sacks Josh Nyman gives up against Nick Bosa. He turns to me. He deadpans. He goes, 5. And I'm like, maybe the under. But, you thought it was going to be a problem. And it wasn't. And Josh Nyman played really well. Give him credit. He had the 15-yard face mask, but he got so much help, too. The quick passing game, the chips from Mercedes Lewis, who said, I'm with you all night, bro. Before the game, he said, you're not alone out there. I'm with you all night. And then the commitment to the running game. All that kind of came together, Tom, to really give a confluence of factors that helped him out.
Yeah, and I wouldn't completely write off what he did, too, because he did have his one-on-one, and including in those last – in the last 37 seconds, he had to take on Bosa one-on-one, and he had to do it in other key situations too. But they did what they had to do to block Bosa, to start Josh Nyman and to block Bosa. And you have to give him credit for that. And am kind of going to explore this on Sunday, but how do they do that now with TJ Watt after, you know, sort of showing their hand of how they would do it with Nick Bosa? TJ Watt's a little bit of a different animal, different defense, but same type of player, and they have to have a plan for him.
What's the difference between those two? When you look at them as pass rushers, different. What's the difference between TJ Watt and Nick Bosa?
I see Bosa as a guy who lines up wide and really wants to use his speed on you. And I look at TJ Watt as like just a complete, you know, he's going to use power, he's going to use speed, he's going to move around, he's going to you know, he can bull rush you, and then he's never ever going to stop. You know, he's going to go all the way to the whistle and maybe a little bit beyond. So you have to keep him contained. But on the other hand, I mean, in addition to that, Pittsburgh, you know, they run the typical Steelers defense where they will bring heat, they will do zone blitzes, they'll do all kinds of stuff. And you can't just write off some of their other guys like Cameron Hayward. I mean, he's a pretty good player. So, you know, and they'll blitz. You know, they got a good linebacker in Devin Bush who can run, and Melvin Ingram is a backup outside linebacker. So it's almost like they have a system that the Packers have to deal with, whereas the 49ers had four guys who are really good and just come at you the same way.
It should be said, the Packers haven't played the Steelers since 2017. Aaron Rodgers, as we said, hadn't played the Steelers since January of 2011. Matt LaFleur said this week he hasn't prepared for the Steelers since 2012. He hasn't been on a team that played the Steelers since then. Now, Nathaniel Hackett has more recently when he was with the Jaguars. So there's, you know, Matt LaFleur can rely and lean on Nathaniel Hackett a little bit in the game planning this week as far as knowing the Steelers and their scheme. But it doesn't change that much. I mean, it's, you know, it's unique and it's different, but it's still got a lot of elements of Dick LeBeau in it.
Yeah, and what's funny is that the Packers were all, anytime they play the Steelers, they were fairly ready for it because Dom Capers ran the same thing. So, you know, in the Super Bowl, Dom Capers had them, you know, had helped McCarthy get ready for what Dick LeBeau was going to send at him. And now they're away from that. You know, the Patton defense, they didn't practice. They don't practice against this type of a defense anymore. So Rodgers has plenty of experience against it. I don't think it'll be a problem for him to read what the Steelers are going to do. I mean, it's a little bit, every defense is different, but he knows the basics of that defense. And I think that will help the Packers a lot in recognizing some things.
As far as the back end, that doesn't get talked about near as much, because when you talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers, it's all on the front end and what they do with their pass rush. Joe Hayden, Minka Fitzpatrick, Terrell Edmonds back there. What do you expect from as far as the Packers and Aaron Rodgers going against that secondary?
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see whether they, you know, bring a safety up and decide they're going to play the box and keep Aaron Jones intact. Or are they going to mix it up, or are they going to go cover two like everybody has done against the Packers so far? I mean, I kind of think that with Minka Fitzpatrick that they're going to move him around and try to find ways to affect the pass game and the run game. So I would be less inclined to think they're going to just sit back and cover two the way the other teams have. I don't think they want to risk Aaron Jones running on them.
And that's the big question, I think, for the Packers offense. If they go cover two, they're going to have to run the football, and they haven't this season. They're 29th in the league with 79.7 rushing yards per game. They're 29th, tied for 29th with 3.4 yards per carry. And the Steelers are right on the fringe of the top 10 in run defense at 88.3 yards allowed per game. So you're talking about no one had this Packers running game 29th in the league after three games, not with Aaron Jones, not with A.J. Dillon. You're talking about what has been a weakness against the Steelers' strength, and they're You know, if they see Tuchel, they're going to have to run him out of it. Are they able to do that? What why has there been a slow start here, in your opinion, for the run game? That everyone, I think, coming into the season thought it would be pretty good.
I think the Packers have been functional as a running team. You know, throw out the Saints game because they just didn't run it at all. But, you know, what they've done is use the run enough to keep the play action alive. It's enough to have Aaron Jones as a threat in the backfield. That's been big. But, you know, they've not been, like, dominant. They don't have any big runs that really makes a defense go, okay, we got to have a guy in the box. So, you know, the 49ers stayed in the game because the Packers couldn't just run them out of the cover too. So that's part of the problem, is that they've got to start breaking off some big runs and make defenses, you know, get out of that two shell and start, you know, doing some things that open up the pass game.
You know what's stunning? Through three games, only one carry of at least 10 yards. It was Aaron Jones, final play of the third quarter Sunday night. That's 12 crazy. Yards. That's a long – one double-digit carry all season is a 12-yarder.
And you know, I watching the game against the 49ers, they had kind of a nice plan. They were double-teaming the inside guys, both inside guys for the 49ers, who typically destroy the Packers. And maybe that, you know, maybe because of that, they were stopping the penetration and they were getting just enough yards to function as an offense. And that's why I call their run game functional. But at some point, they got to get it, like, better than functional. They gotta make teams really respect their run game, and it hasn't gotten there. Maybe it's because of three young guys on the offensive line. I don't know. Maybe when Bakhtiari and Elton Jenkins are back, then their run game kind of, you know, starts to blossom. But right now, it's neutral.
Ben Sermon said something interesting today in terms of, and before Ben Sermon's this morning, Matt LaFleur said that he thought that the run game is trending in the right direction. If you look, I mean, Aaron Jones had 19 carries, 82 yards, season high for him. So it maybe marginally, but it was trending in the right direction. Ben Sermon said that he thought the offensive line did a better job of getting push, just kind of volunteered that. So I do think a lot of this is on a young offensive line that, let's be honest, was pass-proing a lot, getting Jordan Love ready all offseason, mm-hmm. and is now, you know, it's two rookies. It's a third string left tackle. Before that, it was a left guard, a Pro Bowl left guard, but a left guard at left tackle. It's a young left guard that's in his third career start this week. It's Billy Turner, who's Billy Turner, but in Matt LaFleur said the rock of our offensive line right now because he is the veteran. It's a lot of young and moving parts on that offensive line.
Yeah, and, you know, I think they may have something in Runyon. I think he helps a little bit in that regard. I think he's got a little bit more size and, you know, drivability than Lucas Patrick. Ultimately, you know, they need Elton Jenkins back in that guard position. That they need that more than anything. And I wonder if he comes back, would they consider playing Nyman at left tackle until Bakhtiari gets back and moving Jenkins back?
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't considered that because, you know, at left tackle's your left tackle, but they got to see him more than one game, right? Yeah. I mean, it can't just do it off one game when Yosh Nyman played well, but they were doing a lot of things differently on offense to kind of help him out. I think you got to see him for more than one game, right?
I think so, and I think we will. I kind of think they're sandbagging us on Elton Jenkins. I think it's probably worse. Like, maybe it's a high ankle sprain. I don't know. But they keep saying, oh, we'll give him the week. Every time I hear that, I say, okay, he's out.
You know, well, that's the thing. The week, you know? You could, and Tom, you know this better than anybody. You've covered this team longer than anybody. But basically, like to get into coach lingo on injuries around here, day-to-day is maybe he'll play this week, and we'll give him the week is that he ain't playing this week.
Yeah, and maybe not the next week either, you know? I always kind of chuckle when I hear that. You know? So, you know, Jenkins didn't practice Wednesday, didn't practice Thursday. he definitely could play at a moment's notice, but if you're going to go by what the floor said last week, which was they didn't want to shuffle the line, then if Jenkins is ready to go, maybe you don't shuffle the line and you put Nyman at left tackle and you just stick. Jenkins can play anywhere. I mean, God, and left guard's his best position. So,
and that brings us back to T.J. Watt. I want to ask you one question about T.J. Watt and the draft. If he's not a Badger, is it remembered the same way?
No.
Not even close, right?
No, not at all. I mean, there would be people would be saying, you know, well, we could have had T.J. Watt. Well, you know, there's a whole list of guys they could have had. But the fact that he played in Madison and he's from Wisconsin, yeah, that's it right there. You get a lot of Badger fans.
Because for a long time, I was late to – and now, I mean, it's a bad – it's something that they would do over if they could. I mean, they would take T.J. Watt now. There's no question. But for a long time, because you talked about how it changed things. For a long – look, they don't sign the Smiths. They got some pass rush there. And they got a starting caliber corner out of Kevin King. So for a long time, I it wasn't until T.J. Watt became a superstar, which is what he is. You know, and it wasn't immediate. I mean, he showed some flashes as a young player, but wasn't immediate. It wasn't until then – and then you add on the fact that he's a Badger on top of it. I mean, if he played at Michigan,
yeah,
it's right. Not the same thing.
Well, look at the response when J.J. Watt was a free agent. I mean, my God, everybody in the state was, you know, absolutely, they were willing to give him the moon to come to Green Bay. And fact of the matter is, that would have been a huge mistake. You know, they're better. A better signing than J.J. Watt, Devondre Campbell. I'm going to say that right now, that hands down, that's a better signing.
And who would have thought that, right?
Right.
Yeah, J.J. Watt has no sacks this season. He has one quarterback hit in three games.
Yeah.
Devondre Campbell has two turnover plays, which that above anything else from the inside linebacker position has been missing for a very long time. Turnover plays, dynamic turnover plays. Blake Martinez forever was a tackling machine, not a turnover machine.
Right.
Devondre Campbell, that's the most impressive thing he's done coming in.
And, you know, it's not like I wouldn't expect that to continue, but what is amazing is he's so steady. He's just not out of position. You know, he's one of the guys who was so important against the 49ers with all the motion and all the fakes and all that stuff that Shanahan does. And I watch Campbell a decent amount, and he's always just waiting. You know, he never let that stuff influence him. He was so smart in the way he played it. And I think that was a big reason why, you know, they shut them down in the early going. I think it hurt when they lost Chris Barnes, but he was all over the place and just a smart, smart player.
So if you're keeping track on your car ride to work, or maybe you're at work, Devondre Campbell better than J.J. Watt, but T.J. Watt better than Kevin King.
Yeah, I think we can all say that.
That's where we're at.
Right now, that's where we're at right at this moment. Who knows? Kevin King could come back and have 12 interceptions this year.
Hey.
And T.J. Watt could, you know, only have one sack.
He's got more career interceptions than Jaire Alexander. Of course, Jaire Alexander does not get thrown to, but I'm just saying. It's amazing to me, Tom, in this league, how quickly things change. A week ago, I was thinking that this was a game that could be a real problem for the Packers. I was thinking that they'd go in and get smoked by the 49ers, be humbled and have a hangover, and then, oh, you've got Ben Roethlisberger, who is, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers coming to town. Now it looks like the exact, I mean, you know, the Steelers go and lose at home to the Bengals, and the Packers get their signature win of the victory of the season. So it's a different vibe this week.
Yeah, and this is an important win. They need to go 3-1, and it's a game they should win. They're a better team than the Steelers. You know, on paper, they're a better team. If they lose it, then, you know, the 49er game, I don't know. Then all of a sudden, that's like, is that just an aberration? You know, or are they, are they that good? So it is. This will be another good test for them, and then they play the Bengals after that. And so,
and that's looming, and it's a road trip, and the Bengals might not suck.
No, no, I don't think they do. I don't think they do. They've had a couple of really good performances. Yeah, so we'll see.
So each week is its own week, but each week is also tied to, you know, the momentum of the season, and next week will be after the first quarter, that one quarter of the season pull in the 17-game season. So make sure you check, you stay with PackersNews.com for full extensive coverage going into Packers versus Steelers. Big fun matchup. Just you know, a storied matchup, and the first time it's been Aaron Rodgers against Ben Roethlisberger since the Super Bowl. So PackersNews.com before, during, after the game. And until then, thanks for listening, everybody.